Welcome to the Dan Decker Books Podcast. I'm your host, Dan Decker. This podcast is dedicated to providing my books in full, unabridged audio format. Look for new episodes every Tuesday. Now, on with the show. Hello, and welcome back to the Dan Decker Books Podcast. This week, we are continuing to read Blood Games. Last week, we read, I continued my approach, keeping in the shadows as an ever-increasing number of police cars and fire trucks raced towards the scene. When I was within a few blocks, I could go no further. The police had cordoned off the area. Even from where I stood, I could feel the intense heat. The fire had engulfed a dozen buildings, maybe more. I wasn't the only person who had come to see the flames. More and more onlookers appeared. We had all come to see. It was as if the very fires of hell had engulfed the warehouse district. And now, Episode 8. My hands were clenched in fists as I watched the fire burn. People were sure to die just as they had during the Market Street and Old Digon headquarters bombings. It was with grim satisfaction that I thought of how I had foiled Reed's plans for Reading Market. I wished I could have figured out his plans today and somehow stopped it. I was too limited in what I could do. Reed had been going out of his way to minimize the death count, but one person more would have been too much. There would not be just one death today. I feared dozens would lose their lives. I could see ambulances on the other side of the fire. It fanned the flames of my rage, making me wish I had Reed at hand so I could throttle him until he no longer breathed. He would use this fire just like he had used all of the other incidents to further cement the children to him and his cause. Once I caught up to Margaret and Benji, it was going to be difficult to get them to recognize Reed had been behind all this death and mayhem. I doubted they ever would. They weren't going to take that message from me. What did Reed hope to gain from all this destruction? Why turn his focus to his own company? At first, I thought he had just been trying to prove his value to Peck. After taking down the Old Digon headquarters and giving Peck a black eye for his refusal to turn over any information on me before the Reading Market incident, I had decided he had been trying to drive down the price of Digon's shares. He had been successful for a time, but that was short-lived because Spectrum downloads had shot to the top of the charts. It did not make any sense for Reed to target Data Raider. I figured Reed was insane, but had thought there would be a method to his madness. I was just lost, so I watched the fire burn for the better part of half an hour. The flames had grown, and the police were making motions that made me think they were about to push us further back. Several people used the smartphones to record the fire, but I was yet to see one turned on the crowd. Apparently, nobody was afraid I would be near the scene of my alleged crime. As the police were preparing to push out the line, I decided I had pushed my luck long enough. When I turned to go, I recognized a familiar face in the crowd. It was Cherry, wiping away a tear. I did a double take, sure that I had imagined her, but it was indeed her. I made no attempt to contact her. I had made no attempt to contact her since the fiasco at Benny's Diner. Despite my empathy for her and her situation, I began to reach inside my bag for my pistol without realizing what I was doing. I stopped once I did. A cop had just walked down the line. I was lucky I had kept my instincts in check. Once he had gone, I let out a quiet sigh of relief and looked back at Cherry. She had played me. She had almost gotten me killed. The last thing I needed to do was confront her about what she had done to me. When I tried to walk away, I could not make my feet move. I was unable to take my eyes off her. I thought of the scared look on the face of Martinez's girlfriend. Cherry hadn't only put Martinez and me in danger, but it wasn't going to do anybody any good to get her to see that when I was looking for a target to release my emotions. As I watched her wipe away more tears with the palm of her hands, the anger seeped away from me. Turning and taking a step in the opposite direction, I reassured myself I was doing the right thing. What was happening in the city was not her fault. I was not aware of any ties between her and Data Raider. Her attempts to take me down had been personally motivated. But yet, that was not her fault. It was Beltran's. She had a soft heart. She was a decent person who was in pain and had aimed that anger at me. She deserved better than the life Beltran had left her with. Despite my desire, I was unable to leave. I looked back at her. If I could let go of my anger, perhaps I could help her see the truth about what she had done. It could be the catalyst to convince her to leave Daigon. She left and looked right at me, but passed without a word. My disguise had done its job. Knowing that I was not acting rationally, but also believing it was my duty to help, I followed her. I was careful to check my rear and very aware of everybody else around us. I did not think this was a trap, but acted as if it was, staying far back from her and checking all sides for anything out of the ordinary. If he did not suspect me, Peck would be just as puzzled about the terrorist attacks as anybody else. While he was not above using violence to accomplish his goals, it was always targeted. Even the bomb that had killed Ronan Wright had only harmed Ronan. Reed's actions were beginning to remind me of the way Payne had done things. Was Reed stirring things up because he enjoyed the drama? Cherry turned down a street. When she came to a stop in front of an apartment building, I was intrigued. Was she living on her own? Ever since Black Brick had been shut down, I had wondered if my former team had taken up residence in another Daigon-funded facility, or if they had been allowed to get their own places. I now had an answer to that question. While she hesitated outside the steps of the building, I surveyed my surroundings, looking for the slightest hint that this was more than it seemed. If a Daigon team was waiting nearby to take me down, I was not seeing it. She pulled something out of her pocket as I approached. As she checked her phone, she glanced back, but her eyes did not linger on me, even though I was walking underneath a streetlight. I stopped when there was still 10 feet between us. If I got closer than that, I figured she would feel threatened and might run or try to pull a gun on me. I doubted she had the will to shoot me, but I thought I would try to keep off some of the pressure out of the situation. "Help me understand why," I said. Cherry's back went rigid as she spun to face me. "Sticking around to admire your handiwork?" She reached towards her pocket. I should have known. I brought both of my hands out to the side to show I wasn't here to harm her. Her hand stopped in the pocket of her coat, no doubt with her fingers wrapped around a pistol. "I am not behind this," I said. "I had no part in the Market Street or Daigon bombings." "I saw the video of you shooting that bystander at Reading Market," she said. "For every 10 seconds of video you saw," I said, "there was another minute that will never see the light of day. He deserved what he got." "Twice now you have killed in cold blood," she said. "On video." I licked my lips. "Beltran would have killed us, though I know you doubt that. The other had just tried to kill me." I left out the part that he had been unarmed when I had shot him. I could see her point, that there were some similarities to both incidents, but they were as different as night and day. Beltran would have shot us. He had not hesitated to make a run for the rifle. Sam had been disarmed and more concerned about the biological agent he thought had been released with the blasts. Dion and I had prevented whatever had been in that sinister-looking jar from getting out. I still had not been able to figure out what it was, and none of the news stories had even reported it existed. "Why are you here?" she asked. It occurred to me that she was holding the phone in her other hand with the microphone pointed towards me. I hated that when things got hot, Spectrum tended to slip from my mind. "You need to get out of this life, Cherry. It is going to kill you. You are not cut out for it." "And you are," she asked. "You're beginning to lose it. These crazy videos show that." "That wasn't me." I smiled wanly. "Do you think me capable of such a thing?" "I don't know what to believe anymore," she said. "How did they do the videos if it isn't you?" I shook my head. "I don't know." She made a face and shook her head. "Did you come hoping to reconcile?" "Never going to happen." "What you did to Martinez and me has got to be eating you up inside," I said. "You put an innocent woman in danger." Her eyes narrowed. "She's not innocent." "I know you, Cherry. That's not who you..." "You know nothing about me," she yelled. Several men on the other side of the street looked our way. We had been alone when the conversation had started, and I had not noticed them approaching. I wanted to suggest she lower her voice, but decided she would do the opposite. I shrugged and left. It pained me to see her in such a condition, but I was not going to help her today. "Never follow me again," she said. I didn't respond and was glad when I had turned the corner. As I did, I noticed the men watching me. One had a hand in the pocket of his coat. Something about the way he stood told me he did not have a gun, but was hoping to scare me away by pretending. I let out a sigh of relief once I had put a few blocks between them and me. The fire was burning larger than ever, and they'd even brought in helicopters to fetch water from the river. Why was it continuing to grow? Had Reed's people planted other incendiary devices? I shook my head to clear it. How many people would die tonight? How many millions of dollars of equipment and product would be destroyed? Chris and Maxine were willing to help me. All I had to do was say the word. They might not have blood on their hands the way I did, but was it better to let Data Raider target innocent bystanders than to put Chris and Maxine at risk by accepting their help? I stared at the fire for a long time before I accepted the truth that I had been unwilling to face. It was not just my desire to keep Chris and Maxine out of harm's way. I wanted to do this by myself. That was why I kept failing to get at Reed or find the kids. Chris might look into the kids as we had agreed, but if I was there, I could lead the search while taking advantage of their resources for other purposes. How many more people had to die before I was willing to accept help that was freely offered? I had doubted Maxine's intentions before I had met her, but now that I had, I did not think she was looking to increase the value of her business. She was motivated by something else. She had been on the verge of telling me about it multiple times. Whatever it was, she could keep it her secret for now, as long as her offer to help fight Data Raider was legitimate. I pulled out my phone and dialed Chris.
That's it for this week. I hope you have enjoyed the show. Tune in next week for another installment of the Dan Decker Books Podcast. One last thing before you go. Sign up for my newsletter at dandeckerbooks.com, and you will receive a free ebook copy of War of the Fathers. The text, audio, and music for this show are all copyrighted by Dan Decker. All rights reserved. This podcast is published by Xander Revolutions LLC.